make sure.
July was wonderful. And July, August was cold.
We're going to get started about 1 minute.
You can hear me, Paul.
Hello.
Hello, Lydia Chudley from St. Mary's Hospital in Kitchener.
Hi, Lydia. Welcome.
Thank
you're
you.
You're just on time.
I know.
Got about 30 seconds left.
Okay.
Hey, Paul, it's Dan. I'm ready.
Hi, guys. Welcome.
Hey, Paul.
Yes,
it's
Dan.
I'm ready.
Good.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi there.
Okay, everyone, I'm going to put you on mute. On behalf of Dr. Syed Sattar and our teleclass sponsor, Johnson Diversey, I would like to welcome you to Current Best Practices in Hand Hygiene. My name is Paul Weber, and I am honored today to be your teleclass host. There is a lot of material to cover, so I'll dispense with a lot of my opening comments, and we'll get right to it. When I think of international experts on hand hygiene, only two names come to mind, and one of those is Dr. Didier Pathé. Dr. Pathé is a professor of medicine and chair of the infection control program at the University of Geneva Hospitals in Geneva, Switzerland. This man gets around. I first met him at the Chika conference in Toronto. Last week he was in Japan. He seems to be in perpetual motion. But today, right now, he's all ours. To present current best practices in hand hygiene, I give you Dr. Didier Pathé.
Hello.
You're on.
I'm on. Hello, everybody. So we'll go ahead. I hope everybody has the material in order to follow, and I will go the way my slides are set up. So my first slide was just a title, and second slide is welcome to the hospital. Nosocomial infections are waiting for you at the entrance door of the hospital. And hand hygiene, as we all know, is the primary measure for infection prevention. As a background on my fourth slide, I will offer that hand hygiene is considered the most important measure for reducing the transmission of nosocomial pathogens in healthcare settings. But many studies have documented that compliance of healthcare workers with recommended practices is unacceptably low. The next table shows compliance with hand hygiene as observed in several published studies. Those studies were published between 1981 and 1999. On the left-hand side column, you have the name of the author, then the year of the study, and then the setting, and most of the settings were ICUs. And as you can see, and as shown on the right-hand column of the table, compliance markedly varies from one study to another, with an average being below 40%. It's important then to realize that this is the an average that has been seen in most studies. As mentioned on the bottom of the table, nurses comply usually more frequently than physicians, actually in all but one study. If we go to the next slide, where self-reported factors for poor compliance have been listed, I think it would be interesting to spend some time on the slide. These factors include lack of time, in particular in conditions of understaffing or overcrowding, shortage of sinks or sinks that are often inconveniently located, the lack of soap, paper, or tools for hand hygiene, the fact that skin damage is reported after hand hygiene, or the fear that hands will be damaged after frequent hand hygiene, the belief that glove use dispenses from hand hygiene, the absence of role model from colleagues or superiors in your institution, the skepticism about the value of hand hygiene, and the disagreement with the recommendation. And if I look at those, I can certainly say that before we started to study hand hygiene, I already disagree with most of the recommendations that were in the literature, and this you will understand probably later in my talk. If you go to the seven slides, which I guess everybody knows and recognizes, and I guess most of us recall the story of Ignaz Philipp Semmelweis, this Hungarian obstetrician who was working in the General Hospital of Vienna in the middle of the 19th century. As shown on the next slides, on the figures that illustrate the maternal mortality rates in the first and second obstetric clinics in the General Hospital of Vienna at this time, we can see that maternal mortality was higher in the first clinic, this is the top column, where medical students and doctors were actually performing the deliveries. And these rates were higher than in the second clinic, where midwives only were performing the deliveries. Well, it's important to recall that at that time there was no CT scan, scanner or MRI or whatever. And the only way to understand the reason why these mothers that delivered eventually died was to perform an autopsy. And the difference between the first and the second clinic was that in the first clinic, where the medical students and the doctors were delivering the babies, actually, after a death of a woman, they were performing in an autopsy that was just behind the labor room. Well, when Semmelweis realized that, he performed an intervention that is described on the next slide. As of the 15th of May, 1847, students and doctors were required to clean their hands with a chlorinated lime solution when entering the labor room, in particular when moving from the autopsy to the labor room. Well, on the next slide, you see the hand wash basin where actually chlorinated lime was dispensed by Semmelweis, and where you can find this picture in the museum in Vienna. So this is the real hand wash basin. And on the next slide, you show them, and you can see the maternal mortality rates in those two clinics, actually after the intervention that occurred once again as of May the 15th, 1847. And as you can see, immediately in the next month and thereafter for several years, the maternal mortality rate came back to normal and was comparable in the first and in the second clinic. After this very important piece of history, I just would like to come to the issue for you to answer to the question, is it easy to promote hand hygiene among healthcare workers? Well, as a short answer to these questions, I will propose to you to go to the next slide. On the next slide, you see a picture of Ignaz Philipp Semmelweis 2 years before and a few years, probably between 1.5 and 2 years after, he insisted that students and doctors clean their hands with a chlorine solution between each patient. And as you can see on this picture, Ignaz Philipp Semmelweis looked much older on the right-hand side, telling you how difficult it is to promote hand hygiene. And I don't think these things have really changed nowadays. Also, probably our job will become easier in the future. Now, if we go to the next slide, and according to the literature, there have been several parameters associated with successful hand hygiene promotion, and they are listed on the two following slides, and I will read it for you. Number one, education. Two, routine observation and feedback of the performance to healthcare workers. Number three, engineering control or make hand hygiene possible, easy, convenient. Number four, patient education has been proposed. Five, the use of reminders in the workplace, like posters on the wall, and recall that nosocomial infections are important and the importance of hand hygiene. Six, administrative sanction or rewarding has been proposed. Next, seven, change in hand hygiene agent, but I warn people that sometimes in the winter it may be not easy to change a hand hygiene agent. Eight, promote and facilitate healthcare workers' skin care. Nine, obtain active participation at individual and institutional level. 10, obtain and drive an institutional safety climate. 11, enhance individual and institutional self-efficacy. And 12, as I like to say, and last but not least, use a multimodal strategy. This is to say, use several of these strategies listed on those two slides in order to have a successful hand hygiene promotion. So with this as a background, I will now offer to you and discuss with you our experience at the University of Geneva Hospitals with hand hygiene. We first conducted a first study to determine the factors associated with poor compliance to hand hygiene practices in our very large university hospital. We actually have a hospital which is a 2,500-bed hospital, which is a very giant hospital. Now, observational methods were the following. We informed healthcare workers in November of 1994 that we'll be conducting an observational studies that we conducted actually during the first 2 weeks of 1994. We performed 315 20-minute observation periods for a total of 100 hours. Observation periods were in the morning, afternoon, night, week, and over weekend, and they were conducted by the nurses of the infection control programs in Geneva. On the next slide, you see the definitions that we used, and actually we defined compliance as the number of actions being actually hand washing with soap and water or water alone, and hand antisepsis, which is in our hospital the use of an alcohol-based hand rub. Compliance was defined again as the number of actions divided by the number of observed opportunities or indications, as you want, for hand hygiene according to predetermined opportunities as published in the literature. We use also another definition, which is what we call the activity index, which is defined as the number of opportunities for hand hygiene over the total duration of the observation period, which is to say the number of opportunities per hour of patient care. On the next slide, you see the study variables that were studied in our survey: hospital ward, department, time of the day, time of the week, the professional activity, the activity index that I just defined, the nursing census of the ward at time of observation, the patient census, the type of care provided, the bed occupancy rate of the ward at time of observation. The next slide showed you immediately the results of our first study, and this is the compliance with hand hygiene according to professional activity. I don't want to detail those data, but as you can see on the first line, the average compliance among nurses was 52%. It was higher than among physicians, where it was 30%, but lower than among midwives that reached 66%. Importantly, as an example, and as you can see, radiology technicians had a very bad compliance of 8%. But when we talked to those people, we realized that nobody ever did actually give them any education about hand washing or hand hygiene, speaking of patient care. On average, our compliance was 48%, as shown on the bottom of the table, and we observed a total of 2,834 opportunities for hand hygiene. This is to say that it was the largest study ever published on the literature regarding the epidemiology of hand hygiene. On the next slide, you see the most important finding of our study, and actually our study was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine in 1999. And probably the reason for the publication in the Annals was actually this observation that is on the slide number 22, which is the relationship between non-compliance with hand hygiene and the activity index. This is to say the number of opportunities for hand hygiene per hour of patient care. Actually, this number of opportunity is expressed on the horizontal axis and compared in the vertical axis to the compliance with hand hygiene. And as you can see, the higher the number of opportunities for hand hygiene on the horizontal axis, the lower the compliance in the vertical axis. And there was a very strong relationship between the two variables. And as you can see, as soon as the number of opportunity is higher than 10 per hour of patient care, compliance will decrease for each additional 10 opportunities per hour by an average of 5%. And this is to say that it is a very strong phenomenon. And it really expressed that time constraint is the main explanatory factor for poor compliance with hand hygiene based on several models that we dropped and, of course, based on multivariate analysis and techniques that were used. Now, to express these in a more easiest way, you can look at the next slide that relied on compliance and hospital department. And as you can see, in pediatrics, the average compliance was 59%, as to compare to compliance, average compliance in the ICU was 36%. Well, importantly, it is not because nurses in the ICU are bad nurses and they don't want to do a good job, but obviously there is another explanation. And this explanation can be once again taken from the next slide, which shows the relation between opportunities for hand hygiene for nurses and compliance across hospital wards. And this slide shows the number, the average number of opportunities for hand hygiene per hour of patient care for a nurse on the horizontal axis over one single nurse, as to compare to the observed, the average compliance observed in several departments from left to right, being pediatrics, obstetric gynecology, medicine, surgery, and intensive care units. And as you can see, if we look at intensive care unit, on average, there was a total of 22 opportunities per hour for a nurse working in the ICU in our study. So if we go to the next slides, it's easy to say that observed reasons for not washing hands are time and system constraints. This is to say that a high demand for hand hygiene is associated with low compliance, and that full compliance with conventional guidelines may be completely unrealistic based on our studies and already as proposed by a mathematical model published by Voss and Widmer. Well, next slide. Time constraint is a major obstacle for hand hygiene. Would it be possible to bypass the time constraint? Well, next slide shows that if we follow the guidelines for hand washing using hand antisepsis, and as it has been recorded, it will usually take between 1 and 1.5 minutes. Whereas, if you use alcohol-based hand rub, it will usually take between 15 and 20 seconds. So, important to say that certainly the use of alcohol-based hand rub would be a solution to bypass the time constraint. But before thinking about these possible ways to improve compliance, we need to review the data about the efficacy of hand hygiene product, which is what we will do. Is really alcohol-based hand rub more efficacious than hand washing with a medicated soap? On the next slide, which is the slide number 30, is depicted the efficacy of hand hygiene products expressed as the log reduction in bacterial counts after 30-second hand washing with either soap, iodophore, 4% chlorhexidine, or 70% alcohol. As you can see, the log reduction, which is expressed on the vertical axis, is much higher with 70% alcohol than it is with, for example, soap or iodophore or even with 4% chlorhexidine. So it is important to rely and to recall that 70% alcohol, at least in these, but it has been frequently repeated in several other studies, is more efficacious than any other component. On the next slides, I'll summarize for you the advantages of alcohol-based hand antisepsis versus hand washing. It is faster and of greater efficacy than soap and water hand washing. It is of improved accessibility, does not require sinks, plumbing is not required. You can use it in rooms, in corridors, in nursing station. You can even carry small bottles of hand rub solution in your pockets. It is effective against a wide array of organisms, including multi-drug resistant pathogen. Well, next will be the discussion about successful hand hygiene promotion. Is it really an impossible task, as frequently said in the literature? Once again, I will come back to our experience at our university hospital to sort of try to answer this question. The next slide assess the objective of our study, that was to assess the effectiveness of a hospital-wide campaign to promote hand hygiene with a special emphasis on bedside hand rub. The design of our intervention was the following. We conducted seven observational hospital-wide surveys, the same way I explained to you for the first study I described, and they were conducted on a biannual basis from December of 1994 to December of 1997. We used hospital-wide promotion of hand hygiene with a particular emphasis on hand rubbing. For help promoting hand hygiene, we used talking walls figuring the importance of hand hygiene associated with feedback performance. So we monitor the performance of hand hygiene every 6 months at our institution and feedback the information to healthcare workers. The next slide shows the alcohol-based hand rub solution, the bottle that everyone is carrying is in his pocket, in his gown, in Geneva at our institution, and also that you can find all around our beds to really ensure that people could apply bedside hand hygiene. So we really promote hand rubbing at the bedside. On the next slide, you see some of the cartoons that were used on our walls to promote hand hygiene. We call them talking walls. Talking walls means the walls that are talking to you. And as you can see on slide number 38, we obtained from the administrative director of our institution to use the walls of our institution to have special spaces where we can hang color posters that you can see. You can see one on slide number 40, a slide like where it is written, "My son, if they don't get me, you will become multi-resistant." This is referring to MRSA. On the next slide, you can see that the bugs became more and more frightening at our institution. They even became, on the next slide, 42, very, very anxious. And on slide 43, as you can see, those bugs were so anxious that they finally went to our friend Sigmund Freud and talking to him, saying, "Doctor, in this hospital it becomes impossible to cause infections as we want." And on the cartoon, you can see that there was a text saying that the University of Geneva Hospitals is actually fighting against dirty staff and that war has started. Dirty staff is the way we call MRSA at our institution. Well, the outcome measure on slide 44 of our campaign was the main outcome measure was the overall compliance with hand hygiene. And we use several confounding variables to actually that were used in other studies to see if we can control for those variables according to our results. The results of our promotion campaign are shown in the slide 45, where you can see compliance with hand hygiene in successful observational surveys from December of 1994 to December of 1997. And as you can see, compliance improved from an average of around 48% in the first study to an average of around 66% in the seventh study. A marked improvement that was sustained over time, something that had never been seen in the literature before. On the next slide, slide 46, you see the same results that are expressed in the horizontal axis, but with an additional information. Here you can see that most of the improvement in compliance actually was explained by the increased use of hand disinfection, that is the bold character, the more dark shedding of those bars, whereas hand washing remained pretty stable in our institution during the study period. On the next slide, you see the use of alcohol-based hand rub solution between 1993 and 1998, which is to say during the 2 years that preceded our study and the 1 year after the hand hygiene performance study that I just showed. And as you can see, the use of alcohol-based hand rub considerably increased over time and actually is still increasing at our institution. On the next slide, you can see part of the data of our campaign that have actually been published in the Lancet in 2000. And as you can see, according to time on the horizontal axis, which see the successful successive hand hygiene performance studies, you can see that compliance improved markedly in all ward locations, whereas it will be in medicine, pediatrics, surgery, gynecology, or our intensive care. So in all over the places at our institution, the average compliance increased. If we go to the next slide, I would like to address the question, does alcohol-based hand rub really bypass the time constraint? Well, time constraint is really very important in the ICU. It's very high in the ICU where bugs are everywhere, as suggested by this nice cartoon. We looked at our data, and the next slide shows, the slide 51, the trends over time in compliance with hand hygiene in ICUs between 1994 and 1997 at our institution. And as you can see, compliance markedly improved, and it was mostly due to the increased use of hand rub, whereas hand washing remained pretty stable. If we look at the next slide, which is a little complicated but very easy to understand, where you see the relation between the workload assessed by the number of opportunities for hand hygiene per hour of patient care on the horizontal axis and on the vertical axis as to compare to the average compliance rate. As you can see, when you compare hand washing, there is a strong relationship between the workload and the decrease in compliance. In the contrary, if you look at the use of hand rub, it shows you a very flat curve, which is to say that you can certainly actually bypass the time constraint by using hand rub at the bedside as compared to promote hand washing. Now, on the next slide comes the very most important issue. Improved compliance with hand hygiene decreases nosocomial infections, beliefs, or science. On the slide 54, you see the relationship between compliance with hand hygiene that improved at our institution and the reduction in nosocomial infection rates. Actually, those data are more easy to see on the next slide, slide 55, where you have hospital-wide nosocomial infection trends from 1994 to 1998 assessed by hospital-wide prevalence studies, and all infections are confounded. And as you can see, we observed a drop of 50% in the infection rates. What about staff? Next slide. Well, since MRSA spread is essentially via the hands of healthcare workers, it can certainly be stopped by appropriate use of hand rub. And actually, on the next slide, 58, you see the trends in prevalence of nosocomial infections and MRSA cross-transmission rates at our institution between 1993 and 1998, and as you can see, attack rate of MRSA expressed by the bars is decreasing by more than 50%, and prevalence rates of nosocomial infections are really decreasing over time, as expressed by the dots and the 95% confidence interval. We concluded from our study that the campaign resulted in a sustained and significant improvement in compliance with the rules of hand hygiene, that promotion of alcohol-based hand rub was responsible for more active augmentation in compliance, and that we observed a parallel decrease of nosocomial infection rates. The next question that comes to me all the time is, hand hygiene promotion costly? Well, on the next slide, the slide 61, I addressed the objective of our next study, which was to evaluate the cost effectiveness of our successful hand hygiene promotion campaign at our university hospital. Well, for this study, we assessed the direct cost of the campaign using, and this is slide 62, the cost of artist work, the cost of color posters reproduction, the creation and the refreshment of the talking walls, the food during the monthly meeting of the team performance. Team performance was a team created at the institution to really follow the campaign. It was constructed by several people, administrators, healthcare workers, including nurses and doctors, and housekeeping personnel, and several people in the institution, around 40 people. And, of course, office supplies were also included in direct cost estimates. We use indirect cost estimate that, well, actually the personal time that was used, the time of this team performance of around 40 individuals spending time in a monthly meeting to discuss about the campaign, the cost of the preparation of the talking walls. These painters spend time to paint our talking walls. It costs money. The housekeeping time, the poster were removed twice a week. The poster that were on our walls were removed twice a week. And the housekeeping personnel was in charge of removing those posters. So housekeeping time was taken into account. The time of the infection control team, that was a nurse, 10%, a hospital epidemiologist, 5%, the support team, and the time taken for observation sessions and feedback by the entire infection control program team. We also obtained an extra nurse for 4 months at the very beginning of the study that was taken into account the indirect cost. The next slide shows the outcome indicators of our study, annual nosocomial infection rates assessed by repeated prevalence surveys, overall consumption of hand rub solution from 1993 to 2001, additional use of hand rub, adjustment for hospital demographics was performed. The next slide shows the use of alcohol-based hand rub at our institution that tremendously increased, as you can see, from 1995. You have two types of bottle, and the two are illustrated. We have a 100 bedside bottle used for several years at our institution, and a 75 pocket size bottle that was introduced in 1996 to make pocket carriage easier. On the next slide, you see as a summary the cost of hand rub use per 100 admission that is increasing over time, obviously, but can be summarized as shown on the bottom of the slide as $1.22 US dollar per admission since 1995, beginning of the campaign, and in 2001, where the cost of hand rub solution was the highest, it would be summarized by $1.96 per actually admission. On the next slide, slide 67, you see the hand hygiene promotion campaign at our institution expressed as direct and indirect cost of intervention. As you can see, during the first 3 years, we had a certain amount of direct cost and a certain amount of indirect cost. When you look at 1998, 2000, 2001, you can see that the indirect cost remained pretty stable, whereas the direct cost continued to increase over time. On the next slide, where you can see the overall cost, the total cost of intervention that are expressed on using Swiss francs on the vertical axis, but summarized using U.S. dollars for the several time of the period. So the three first year of the study, as you can see, the campaign cost to us as a total cost more than $224,000. And then if you look at 1998, 1999, 2000, 2001, it progressively increased to reach in 2001 a total of $108,000 for the entire institution. Remember, however, that our institution is a 2,500-bed hospital. Speaking of an average, it costs $82,000 per year. Now, when you get the cost of the hand hygiene promotion campaign, you should compare this cost, and this is performed on slide number 69, with the cost of nosocomial infections. And as you can see on the slide, the cost of nosocomial infections decreased over time in our institution. There were around actually $40 million in 1994-1995, whereas it decreased to around actually $8 to $10 million between 1997 and 2001. On this slide, you actually see the cost of hand hygiene, but you have problem to see the cost of promotion. The next slide, number 70, tells you that this slide is neither a mistake nor a joke. Effectively, on the next slide is expressed the fact that nosocomial infection rates decrease, so the cost of nosocomial infection rates, the cost of nosocomial infection actually decreased, whereas the cost of hand hygiene increased. But the problem is that you need to use another scale to realize that. On the slide number 72, cost comparison between nosocomial infections versus hand hygiene promotion campaign during the three last year at our institution between 1999 and 2001 is given. As you can see, the cost of nosocomial infection sum up to a total of almost $29 million, whereas the cost of hand hygiene promotion actually reached $0.29 million. So this is to say that you should increase the size of the scale of the column by 100 to see the level of the cost of hand hygiene promotion. And this is during a time where the average infection rate at our institution was 9.7 per 100 admission. If we go to slide number 73, you can read our conclusions. The total cost of the campaign averaged US$82,555 per year. This is to say $1.62 per admission. In 2001, it reached actually US$2.30 per admission. I like to say usually that this is probably less than the cost of a Big Mac at McDonald's. So I think that hospital administrator can certainly offer to our patient the equivalent of less than a Big Mac. Well, importantly, while indirect cost remained stable, direct cost increased, in particular because of increased use of alcohol-based hand rub that reached $1.96 per admission in 2001, and that represented actually 85% of the total cost of the hand hygiene promotion campaign. So I like to say that cost of hand hygiene promotion, including hand rub use, corresponded to around 1% of the cost attributable to nosocomial infection in our large teaching institution. Well, next I will say that we can do it. We can save money by using good hand hygiene promotion. And if we can do it, you can certainly do it. And on slide 76, I will offer that rub hands. It saves money. And as a conclusion, I will also offer that based on our data and data from other groups around the world, hand washing should be considered as an action of the past, except when hands are visibly soiled, and alcohol-based hand rub is or has to become the standard of care. In the next 3 minutes of my talk, I would say I will try to summarize for you actually hand hygiene compliance or how to get things done. It is important to realize that poor compliance should not be viewed only as a problematic individual behavior. On the next slide, slide 80, you can see that factors associated with non-compliance are summarized and are not only at the individual level. As shown, there are several parameters that are at the individual levels, like lack of education or experience, being a physician, male, the lack of knowledge of guidelines, and sometimes you have people that are refractory non-complier. Now, there are also factors that are at the group level, like the lack of education, the lack of performance feedback, the fact of working in critical care with a high workload, the fact that your hospital is downsizing or your unit is understaffed, and the lack of encouragement for key staff. And as shown on the next slide, there are also factors for non-compliance that are at the institutional level, like the lack of guidelines, the lack of administrative leadership, sanction, rewarding, support, the lack of available or suitable hand hygiene agent, the lack of skincare promotion agent, the lack of hand hygiene facilities, the lack of culture or the lack of tradition of compliance. So it is very important to realize that it is not only the problem of the individual healthcare worker to comply with hand hygiene, but it really becomes the problem of several healthcare workers working in an institution, and this is very important to keep this in mind to be successful for hand hygiene promotion. Now, if I would like to summarize, next slide, the parameter for successful hand hygiene promotion, I would say that there are many. And if I come back to what I showed you at the very beginning, slide 83, the parameters associated with successful hand hygiene promotions are listed on the slide. And those that have been used in Geneva are indicated on the right-hand side. Education, yes. Routine observation and feedback, yes, we used it. Engineering control, actually we made hand hygiene possible, easy, convenient at the bedside. We didn't use patient education. We use reminders in the workplace. We didn't use administrative sanction or rewarding. We didn't change our hand hygiene agent, but we widely promoted hand rub. We promoted and facilitated healthcare workers' skin care by making sure that they could have creams and lotions to take care of their hands freely available in the hospital. We obtained active participation at the individual and the institutional level. We obtain and probably drive an institutional safety climate, and maybe we enhance individual and institutional self-efficacy by using our campaign. But most importantly, as mentioned earlier, and as nicely actually illustrated to you today, we use a multimodal promotion strategy. This is to say, as you can see on those two slides, that we use several of the parameters that have been listed as successful promoter of hand hygiene and were successful probably and because of the use of this multimodal strategy. If we move to the next slide and summarize the possible reason for successful promotion in Geneva, I can say that we made hand hygiene possible in a timely fashion. We conducted observation and performance feedback, and we use a multimodal, multidisciplinary approach using communication and education tools, reminders and performance feedback, active participation at both the individual and the institutional level. We made hand hygiene compliance an institutional priority. We enhanced the image of the institution. We enhance the sense of individual and maybe collective commitment, and we possibly enhance the self-efficacy and the perception to health threat. Well, in order to illustrate to you on the next slide, the way healthcare workers were involved in our study, you can see one of our posters. I just want to say that also those posters will look like funny cartoons. Actually, they were a little funny, but it was not the purpose of it. Each poster was created by an artist, in wards with the collaboration of ward nurses and physicians. Ward nurses and physicians really gave the idea of the poster, and the artist translated the idea into a cartoon. Now, in order to return this idea to each individual and collective healthcare workers or the wards, each poster carried the name of the ward that had proposed the message. So if the message was proposed in the ICU and I was working in the pediatric department, I could find a cartoon that was made by the ICU all over the place in the hospital. And because the cartoons were moving and changing, everyone could see the cartoons and really enjoy the work of other workers at other places in our institution. Then there was a text. The text and the wording were reviewed by a team of representative healthcare workers at our institution, the team that was called Team Performance, that really meet every month and discuss the problems of the campaign, the promotion campaign, discuss the cartoons, the text and wording of the cartoons, accepted or did not accept the cartoons, ask the artist to go back and redo the cartoon again. On the next picture, on the next slide, 87, you can see an example of a group working together with the artist in the middle. Actually, it was a group working in the neonatal intensive care unit as an example. Well, as a conclusion, I guess that we can all actually defeat bugs, as explained on the next slide. So I would say and encourage everyone by saying, let's do it to improve patient safety and make sure that our patient can return home safely. With these, I would like to thank you for your attention. We'll be more than happy to answer any question.
Thank you, Dr. Pateas. Paul Weber again. I'm going to jump back in. It's almost time for questions. I'm going to ask a couple of them right off the bat that were sent in by participants. I'm still thinking that somebody's going to go back to their hospital and say, listen, we can either spend $2 and change on hand hygiene, or we can feed each patient a Big Mac. Take your pick. One question that was sent in deals with fingernails and talks about broken fingernails, long fingernails, and the wearing of artificial nails or nail polish. Have you noticed any impact on any of those things to the efficacy of hand hygiene?
Okay, the first thing to say that in our institution, as in many institutions in Europe, speaking of artificial nails are not used. They are not allowed. So nurses and doctors cannot work with artificial nails. That's the first thing. And to continue the discussion about artificial nails, as you may see, we have been working together with John Boyce to redo and rewrite the guidelines for hand hygiene in healthcare settings. And there will be tomorrow an official announcement at IDSA, at the meeting of Infectious Disease Society of North America. The announcement will be made, and actually the guidelines will be printed and published very soon. And you can read in those guidelines that actually artificial nails should not be used at the patient during patient care. So that's the first thing to say regarding artificial nail. Now, regarding nail polish long nails, and actually to say also about long nails, there will be also in those guidelines a recommendation for working with nails that should not be too long. Now, speaking of the efficacy, the impact of hand hygiene on nail polish, actually, usually the content and the type of alcohol that is used in hand rub are not actually very powerful at decreasing the amount of nail polish that is applied on fingers. So this is not clearly an issue. Now, is there a reduction in the activity of the use of soap, medicated soap, or alcohol-based hand rub when healthcare workers are using nail polish? There is no definitive study in the literature to really answer to this question. It would certainly not be recommended in those guidelines to remove nail polish before coming to work for a nurse, because there is no consistent data in the literature to support such a strategy. So also, it has been debated over several years. I think what is the most important is to realize that mainly artificial nails should not be used at the patient site and at the bedside.
Thank you. One last question. During immunization, and this time of year, we get a lot of flu vaccinations. When is it appropriate to wear gloves or to not wear gloves? And is it an option, and should you use your hand rub between each patient or each visitor? Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, actually, there are some recommendation, but there are also different opinions. For flu shot recommendation, you are dealing actually with a situation where you are working with intact skin. So usually with intact skin, with careful healthcare workers, you are not obliged to use gloves. Also, most institutions will recommend the use of gloves in the setting of standard precaution. I think it's completely debatable. In our institution, we will not use gloves, and we will definitively use alcohol-based hand rub in between each immunization and each contact with each healthcare worker. Actually, the use of gloves actually is not cannot prevent people to actually perform hand hygiene. And if you use a pair of gloves to immunize healthcare workers, you should change your gloves after each healthcare worker. So there will be a single pair of gloves after for each healthcare worker that you immunize. Plus, after you had removed your gloves, you should actually hand wash or hand disinfect, because as you probably know, when we remove our gloves, we frequently contaminate our hands, and because gloves are not intact most of the time when you are working. So also there is no definitive rule that can be written. I think that most of the time in most institutions we will not use gloves for immunization, and we will certainly hand rub in between each contact with each healthcare worker.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take everybody off of mute now. If you have a question, please take yourself off of mute by pressing your own mute button or pressing *6, whichever you did to put yourself onto mute, and identify yourself by at least your first name and the facility or the city from which you are calling. And at this point, there's always a bit of hesitation because some people don't have their phone on mute. If you're not sure if you do or not, please be in a quiet room.
Hello?
Hello, is there a question? Has anybody got a question at this time for Dr.
Patel? I have a question from Saskatoon.
Yes, ma'am.
We're wondering if there's a recommendation as to how many times you can use the hand rub solution before you should actually wash with soap and water. Can you use it indefinitely, or is there like every 10 patients or whatever?
No, absolutely not. I know there have been several people giving some of the recommendation like that. There are even companies that are recommend to use a hand wash after 4 hand rubbing, or after 6, or even after 10. There is absolutely no reason for such a recommendation. What I would say is that you can use alcohol hand rub every time you need to use it, as long as you need to use it, and there is no need for the use of hand washing in between any hand rubbing action. Now, what is actually sometimes evident is that several of those hand rubs, like, this is like rinse and in particular gels, they tend to leave on your skin some impression, and some people like after that to hand wash from time to time. But there is absolutely no recommendation, and there is no reason for such a recommendation, except maybe some people find it more comfortable.
Thank you very much. An excellent question.
Yes. Joseph Lam from City of Ottawa Public Health Branch. Dr. Bidet, you mentioned that in winter time there shouldn't be any change in hand hygiene agent.
Paul, it was very difficult for me to hear the question. Can you repeat the question?
If I heard it correctly, one of your slides indicated that it's difficult to change, or that it's perhaps uncalled for to change the hand hygiene agent during the winter time, and I think there was a request for explanation of that.
Yeah, I would say that it is absolutely feasible to change it during the winter, but you should be aware that the fact of using a different agent, in particular if you use hand rub and people will use more and more alcohol, it dries a little bit your hands. And in this condition, it is not the optimal time during the winter, in particular in the north countries where the winter is pretty cold. It will be more difficult to have wider acceptance of such a change. So you should be very, very very careful by also promoting skincare lotion at the same time you are promoting alcohol-based hand rub. By the way, you should know that if you compare the use of medicated soap to the use of alcohol-based hand rub, you will kill your skin a lot faster with medicated soap than you will actually dehydrate your skin with alcohol-based hand rub, because the detergent that are in the soap actually are the one that kills the lipids in your skin and really speed up the process of defatting and really damage your skin. But to answer to your question, it is clear that during the winter you should promote more even than during the summer in the Nordic countries the use of actually protective cream for hands.
This is Denise Harbert. Can I ask a question?
Oh, yes.
Thanks.
Oh, thanks. It's Denise Harbert from Camrose, and I have a question about Clostridium difficile, and I'm wondering if the alcohol hand gel is effective in killing the...
Okay. Now, as you know, when we are talking Clostridium difficile, we are talking spores, okay? So, actually, there is absolutely no disinfectant that is active against spores. So alcohol is not effective, but chlorhexidine is not effective, iodine is not effective. There is no single antiseptic that is effective against spores. The only antiseptic that is effective is chlorine, but at very high concentration that you cannot use on your hands, because you will kill your hands. Now, this is to make it clear. So that's one of the reasons why during the care of C. diff patient, you should wear gloves and gowns, but gloves in particular, and remove gloves immediately after taking care of the patient. And then you can use either hand washing or hand rubbing, whatever, to actually kill other bugs than spores of C. diffs. But certainly, abundant hand washing will help, and this is what is recommended actually in the guidelines that will be published.
Thank you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes,
sure.
This is Joanne from PDI, and I have two questions. The first one is, you recommend 70% alcohol. Most of the hand rubs contain 60 to 63%. Is 70% the absolute, or any alcohol rub in that range?
Mm-hmm.
Would be effective.
Well, no. Actually, what we recommend usually is between 60 and 80%.
Yes.
Okay? Yes. Now, it depends what you are talking about. And when you use isopropyl alcohol, you can use lower concentration than using ethyl alcohol, which are two different alcohols.
Uh-huh.
Now, what you should be very aware of is that in the United States, when you speak about alcohol-based hand rub, you usually speak about gels because there are only few companies producing rinses. Now, speaking of a gel, the higher the content in alcohol, the better it is. The better is probably the more efficacious the gel is, because gels are a little bit less efficacious than rinses, but they are much more efficacious than medicated soaps.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I guess what is your opinion on antimicrobial hand wipes that would have a 63% base of alcohol as opposed to just using a hand gel or a hand rinse?
Yeah. The problem of those wipes for hand hygiene is that none of those wipes has been really investigated in careful studies. And actually, we are not exactly sure of what is the efficacy of those wipes. I would say that they could be useful in some conditions for specific indications that, well, if you don't have anything else. But we will not recommend the systematic use of those wipes because actually the exact content and amount of alcohol that is spreading from the wipe to actually the hands is unknown. And there is no definitive study to prove that they are as efficacious as rinses or gels.
Uh-huh. What if the amount of active ingredient coming off the towel is the same as if you can prove that it's the same as the active ingredient coming off of the gels?
Well, it's very difficult to prove that. What you should, it's not what you should prove. What you should prove is actually do, first of all, laboratory studies that look at the decrease, at log reduction in bacteria after artificial counts. Then you should probably look at study in vivo testing, the dynamic of colonization of hands of healthcare workers at the bedside. And those two studies, type of studies, have been conducted very largely for rinses, and some studies have been conducted for gels. And then the ultimate goal would be to use those wipes at the bedside and control and count the infection rates and see whether they can decrease infection rates. Personally, I will not do such studies because of the major inconvenience of those wipes, which is the tons of wipe that you should discard after use.
Okay.
Guys, I'm going to have to bring the question period to a close. I'm sorry. We're going to lose our line very soon. Dr. Pate, thank you so much for that presentation. What a wealth of learning you have brought to us. And we're so grateful that you were able to find the time to spend with us.
It's a pleasure.
I'd like to note again the key contribution made by Johnson Diversey. They have been tireless supporters of the teleclass series from the beginning. Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. If I have your email address, you will very shortly receive a message from me asking for your feedback on what you have experienced in the last hour, and I would be very happy to hear from you. The next teleclass and the last teleclass in the 2002 series is on December the 5th and is entitled Reprocessing of Medical Devices. You'll hear more about this in the weeks to come. If you get Infection Control Today magazine, there's a little quarter-page ad on it in the November issue. You'll also hear from me what we're preparing for the 2003 teleclass series. There's a whole list of really fantastic speakers and topics. Again, thank you all for making this an enormous success and our biggest teleclass ever. And we'll talk to you again in December. Dr. Pate, thank you very much. And everybody, have a very good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
For me, it will be a night. Hello, Paul?